Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Empowering Family Caregivers Show on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Susan Bida, your host and for today's show, and am the co-founder of eCareDiary.com. Today, we are going to talk to our very own caregiving expert, Marjorie Papps, about her new book called Words of Care, a reference tool for the busy caregiver. I can't think of a better holiday gift to give someone that you know who is in the process of caregiving. So I'm very pleased to introduce Marjorie, and just to give you a little background about her, she's an expert in the field of caregiving and a former caregiver herself. She works with corporations, medical institutions, and caregiver support associations to guide and counsel caregivers on the challenges that they face. Now, she is the host of two of our radio shows on eCare Diary. Called one is called Caregiver Speak, which is an online support group which caregivers can listen to and hear a panel of caregivers speak with her or another special guest expert. And callers are invited to call in with questions during and after that portion of the show. She's also the host of Caregiver and Physician Conversations, which happen on Tuesdays at the end of the month, the last week of the month, and that is a fascinating show as well. Marjorie is also the founder and president of the PAPS Foundation, whose mission is to encourage innovative and interdisciplinary conversations for long-term impact on the community. Marjorie, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it's just a terrific pleasure to be here, Susan. I always love talking with you and always learn something from you. So I think our viewers will hear something from both of us today.
Well, congratulations on your book. And this is, you've written four books, and now this is your fifth book. Tell us about the motivation behind Words of Care.
Well, you know, 4 years ago, Enrich Your Caregiving Journey was published. Can you believe that? It's just amazing.
That's how we met.
That's right. We met at one of my book signings. And as I'm sure you know, and many people in the audience know, a lot has happened around the issue of caregiving in those 4 years. And we've all learned a lot. And so one of the things that I wanted to do was to provide additional information for caregivers, particularly around issues like family dynamics. That was one. And then, you know, how to handle chronic diseases for the caregiver who's just in it for the long haul. And then, over the last 4 years, I've also looked at ways that caregivers can assess themselves, sort of a self look at, you know, how am I doing? When do I need to seek even professional help? Just always kind of keeping a self-barometer going. So those kinds of things I thought would be helpful as another book on caregiving.
That's great. And your book is very different from your other books. This has a different feel to it. And I know what I want you to tell us why it's so different, because I think it's very relevant for today.
Yes. Well, the first four books really took more of a story format. I'm a storyteller at heart. And so the first book on caregiving, like the three books before it, all took a format of telling a story and having tips and tools and truths, if you will, come out of the story. So in Enrich Your Caregiving Journey, it's three separate stories about caregivers. And one is caring for a child, and one for a spouse, and one for a parent. And so that's the formatting of it, is pretty much a story, and then what did we learn from it? What did we learn from that story? This new book is, I would characterize it as specific tools which can be read in very short segments, say 5 minutes worth. If you have an issue, let's say it's around family dynamics, let's say it's specifically about the holidays, that you can go into the table of contents, find that article that can be read easily in 5 minutes, get those tips and tools out of that article and be on your way. And so it's one of those books that you dip into when you need it rather than necessarily reading from beginning to end.
That's terrific. And so often caregivers are too busy to even, devote quality time to themselves. So this is a great way to give them quick snippets of information. We've become faster readers in this day and age, haven't we?
Yes, we have. And, you make a good point, Susan. You know, even if caregiving hadn't changed, I think people's mode of gathering what they need, information, has changed. And the Internet, whether we like it or not, has really changed our mode of accessing information.
Yeah, no doubt. So let's talk about some aspects of your book, and you mentioned that caregivers in your book can actually do an assessment of their own situation. So before I think we go into details of that, tell us, I guess, why it's important in the first place to do an assessment.
Well, if you don't really know, I think self-awareness, maybe that's a good way to put it, that life is about, the more self-aware we are, whether it's going to college, and being there in your freshman year and you're surrounded by all kinds of different possibilities and people, to finding that special someone in your life and your age and having children, and I think the more self-aware we are of what we need, what our values are, what we can do well, what we can't do so well, and particularly that last part, I think, for caregivers, to really be honest with ourselves and say, let's be a little self-aware here. We're like, what is it that I really, really like to do and can do well? And what are the things I really don't like to do or that I'm really not skilled at? It seems to me that having a clear picture of oneself, of assessing oneself, is so important.
Right. And I find, and I'm sure you do too, in your encounters with caregivers out there, that that's not an instinctive thing to do, which is to assess their situation or be self-aware, because they tend to want to take on so much and maybe take on things that they may not necessarily be great at.
Yes.
So why don't you tell us?
Right.
Yeah. And so tell us a little bit about how they can do an assessment of their situation. Like what kind of things should they be asking themselves?
Okay. Well, let me just refer to one of the assessments in the book. My recommendation, and another thing that I've really become much more aware of since I wrote the first book on caregiving, is that so many of us don't always identify ourselves as caregivers, that whole issue of self-identification. And I've run into so many people who say, oh, I'm not a caregiver. And you ask them, well, how much time during the week do you spend? Well, I just take my mother to the doctor and I get her groceries. And maybe I take her to the doctor more than once. But, you say, well, how long? Well, probably takes 5-6 hours a week, that person will say. Well, really being aware of the amount of time you're spending and then how that time is increasing over time is very important, because it is a surprise to me that so many people then can get into the 20 hours per week and then all of a sudden go, oh my gosh, I'm a caregiver. and it's kind of funny in a way, but
yeah,
it's not so funny when all of a sudden it dawns on us that we're really in the middle of it.
Right.
And so one of the items in the book is to calculate how much time per week you're actually spending and on what types of tasks. And I list all of the different tasks that might be called caregiving. And I think many people are surprised when they add up the numbers of hours and tasks that they're already doing. And so I think that's a good place to start. There are other assessments about getting in touch with your emotions, identifying your family members, who you can trust, that kind of thing. But I think starting with the time issue is the place to start on the assessment piece.
That's so, and yes, you're right. It can shock us after we add it all up. Now, this is a good segue because I think that sort of awareness of the time spent may make asking for help easier. I think caregivers have a very hard time asking others for help. They just take it on and just kind of run with it. And what do you recommend as the first step to asking for help?
Yes. Well, I agree with you, Susan. I think it is the key issue. We can analyze the motivations for that. I think it's many times we love this person we're caring for, and we really feel obligated to care, to all the care. Or if it's a parent and we remember that person having cared for us. And so we tend to just not want to ask for help. But a way that I would start is I would say think small. Of a small thing that you don't particularly like to do. This is how it links back to the assessment of yourself, your awareness. Because clearly you can't love to do all that you do in your caregiving role. So pick something you're not particularly crazy about doing and then identify one task within that area. Maybe it's cooking meals or something else. But pick one small thing and then pick a person that you trust to do that. Because the key is to be when you delegate a task. You don't want to say to your next-door neighbor, for example, I need you to prepare meals for me for the next week. Right? And then the neighbor comes with foods that you don't like or that your loved one doesn't like. You know?
Right.
That's kind of an extreme example, but you get my point. To be specific on asking for what it is that you really need and start small. Don't say, I need for you to do this for a whole week. Ask somebody to come over and sit and read to your loved one for an hour. That's more doable. Person's more likely to be successful. And once you're successful and you go, wow, I got that hour to myself, then I think caregivers are more likely to then go ahead and work more with asking for help.
Yeah. Well, and that's one, that's terrific and so easy to do. It seems so easy to do. So for the caregivers who are out there listening, why don't you make that promise to yourself over the holidays? Maybe try to find someone. I imagine there are a lot of people around, maybe a lot of people on vacation coming to visit you. Take the leap of faith and see if this little experiment will work next week. So, Marjorie, let's also talk now about the emotional aspects of caregiving, and you have some really great, quick and easy suggestions for managing those emotional ups and downs in caregiving in your book. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. In reference to your last point about starting small and promise yourself that you will go out and do that this next week, I would refer you to an article that I wrote, a blog article, on the website yesterday is the
That's
lead
right.
article.
That's right.
About keeping Christmas simple, the holidays simple. And, that's the other thing is, we don't want to overload ourselves, by putting up five wreaths, maybe one wreath is sufficient, and ask somebody to do that. So, again, these things are related where you go for simplicity in what you ask for help on, not to overload yourself. So I'd refer you to that article on the eCare Diary website.
Well, thank you for mentioning that. So in addition to her radio shows, Marjorie is an expert and she contributes these wonderful articles. And yes, please see it. It's right on our homepage of the website, and it's a great piece on keeping it simple. So that's one way to manage the emotional ups and downs. But you also talk about, this could also be a very trying time, especially when family members are probably coming together and, you know, maybe long-distance family members are coming in and kind of seeing how mom or dad are doing and assessing the situation and probably, you know, chiming in and making the caregiver, you know, the primary caregiver feel a little like, okay, hold on a second here, you know. What do you suggest for those kind of real, I can just picture what the caregiver must be going through during that particular week. So
exactly.
What do you suggest?
Exactly. Well, again, just to draw a cause and effect in our listeners' minds, keeping things simple is the first thing for those out-of-town guests, because imagine if they come into your home and you're still rushing around, putting the decorations up, trying to cook recipes that have 25 ingredients.
Right.
They're going to perceive you as being a bit unhinged, right? And
yeah.
that will start things rolling in the negative way. So, again, the more prepared and simple you keep that holiday, the better off you're going to be in terms of their perceptions of you. Other thing I would suggest is I love to anticipate. I think looking ahead and saying, well, now what could happen? What is going to happen? And one thing that I employed, I would send my family members who were coming to visit when my husband was ill here at home at Christmas, I prepared them for what to see and experience with regard to his health. And then I also prepared them with respect to how often he would need to take a nap and the kinds of activities that I was thinking might be appropriate. And I asked for their advice, help on, say, two-hour activities or one-hour activities, suggesting that we as a family all gather either in the late morning or in the late afternoon after he'd gotten up from his rest, never having a late night. So that way when people arrived, they weren't saying things like, well, why aren't we staying up until midnight watching movies like we used to? But rather to just give them a heads up that this has changed. And I think people don't like surprise. You know how that is. We don't like surprises
right.
in anything in life. And if people aren't surprised when they arrive about some of the things that are planned and that you ask for their help in some, again, small ways, what specific kinds of activities would you like to go through the family scrapbook this year, that type of thing.
Right.
But that those kinds of things can be helpful.
Keeping it simple go ahead.
The other thing is I always tried to pick out a family member who I knew would really, truly listen to me. I think the emotional up and down, we're going to have them. And so I think venting, for me, talking about my emotional ups and downs and frustrations and so on. And I always tried to single out a family member, and I always did. It was an aunt. And she was the kind of person who would just listen. Now, let me explain the kind of person you don't want to enlist to talk to about your frustrations. You know, don't talk to a family member that you anticipate is going to say things like, well, that's not so bad. When I was taking care of Harry, it was just that bad, except it was worse. You know, you don't
yeah.
want people who are not going to empathize and who are in their own trying to be thoughtful way, they'll try to make you feel like their situation was worse, when in fact they're really not helping at all. They're trying to be
right.
thoughtful, but they're just not doing it in a way that's going to help you. So pick out one person who will listen, you know, find some time to just step aside with that person during the holiday and just talk it through. And I think that will be incredibly helpful to you because you've gotten it off your chest to one person and you've heard their, you know, empathic remarks. And simply, I understand what you're going through. And, you know, sometimes that's all it takes.
Yeah. And then, you know what, and you're so right. That is, you know, it's knowing who to talk to, because you talk to the wrong person in your family. You think your family's, I mean, you know, we all know who they are in our families.
We sure do.
You know, so, I want to talk a little bit about conflicts, because you've talked about ways in which to manage and keep things simple and, you know, finding the right person in your family to talk to. You know, this is also a time, especially when family members come together and they're all conflicting thoughts about how to best care for mom or dad. What do you suggest about, you know, managing those conflicts and keeping kind of things calm, especially in front of the person being cared for?
Yes. Well, I'll refer back to a couple of principles I mentioned earlier. And that is keeping it simple and keeping it small and doable. And in that respect, trying to find a specific role for everybody who wants to be involved. And normally, most everybody in a family, they all are well-meaning. I mean, for most people, now there is that, maybe that 5% of people who really are mean-spirited. I think most people really want to try to help. They just don't know quite how. So it's helpful, I think, to cut down on disparaging remarks, complaining, and all of that by keeping people busy, giving them something to do, a specific role. Now, some of you listeners out there, you're thinking, oh my gosh, I've got 19 people in my family. You know, I can't think of something for everybody to do. Well, one suggestion would be to break it down. And I know of a good friend of mine has two siblings. And so what she did was she, the two siblings, and she asked for their help in identifying specific things that each of the two siblings took certain family members, three or four family members. And they were sort of in charge of keeping those family members busy, giving them a specific role, you know, something to do. And she reported to me that it worked pretty well. But, you know, again, you don't have to do it all yourself. Kind of break it down and see, enlist, again, some people you can trust. In this case, for her, it was a couple of siblings. It might need to be more people. Keeping people busy and then thanking them. Always remember to thank. Say, thank you so much for mashing the potatoes, or thank you so much for taking the dog for a walk, whatever it is. Really, that continues to generate a participation.
Yeah.
Another really simple thing that I think is just a delightful tip is when you put people around the table to have place cards, and ensure that you don't sit people next to each other who might say something inflammatory to that other person. If Uncle Ned and Aunt Alice don't get along well, don't sit them next to each other at the family holiday table.
Keep them far apart.
Yes, indeed.
This book is, thank you so much, Marjorie, for all these wonderful suggestions, and they're so meaningful, particularly during the holidays, which we're already in the midst of, whatever holiday is we're celebrating. Tell us about where we can find your book. And I know there are a number of places, and can you share with us just a little information about that?
Certainly. A press release went out, I believe it was a couple weeks ago. And so you can find the information on that press release and the book, of course, on ecarediary.com. And you can also find information about all of that on my website at pivotalcrossings.com. Or you can go directly to Amazon.com, where you can find this book.
Terrific. Marjorie, thank you so much. This has been a real pleasure. Congratulations on launching your fifth book. And we look forward to, you know, having you back and maybe telling us about your next book.
You never know. Sure. I said never. Right. I would never again, but here we are. So never say never. And thank you so much, Susan, for your support and for eCare Diary support. You guys are terrific, and you're leaders in this whole area of caregiving. So I'm particularly fortunate to be associated with you.
Oh, that's so kind. Thank you, Marjorie. I want to thank our audience so much for tuning in, and this is our last show for the year, but we will be back next Tuesday, January 8th, when we will be conducting our live online support group created by Marjorie Pabst, and she will be moderating it. It's on January 8th, Tuesday at 2 p.m. You can hear it live on ecarediary.com. There's a link available to listen to it live. And it airs usually on the second Tuesday of every month. And the January 8th show will focus on managing home health care workers. That should be really interesting and a lot of very stimulating and I think fiery conversation around that topic, I imagine.
Absolutely, because when you ask for help and have a professional healthcare worker come in your home,
yeah,
that does present another set of not problems but opportunities for managing them properly.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I want to invite everyone to listen to that show, and with any of these shows, they are always available in archive right on our website under the radio tab under content. So please join us and feel free to visit our site to listen to our past shows. To learn more about eCare Diary, we are at ecarediary.com, and you can register with our site. It's all free and gives you immediate access to the Care Diary tool as well as other tools on the site. And we are all over social media. And on the last note, I want to thank everyone and wish everyone a very, very happy holiday season and a very happy and healthy new year. And Marjorie, thank you again, and we
You're
look
welcome.
Forward to your show on January 8th.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Bye-bye.
Bye.